From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, while Iran is in the news for threatening the U.S., they're also a threat to their own people. Earlier this afternoon, I spoke on Capitol Hill at an event hosted by International Christian Concern focused on persecuted Christians in Iran. Senator Ted Cruz was also one of their keynote speakers. I'll ask him about Iran and about his investigation into potential religious discrimination here in the U.S. at Yale Law School when he joins us in just a little bit. And a new study reveals that religious couples have happier marriages. Dr. Brad Wilcox, director of the National Marriage Project, joins me with the details. Also, is Bernie Sanders right?
We have come a long way in the last 4 years. The American people have made it clear they are sick and tired of billionaires running our country. They want justice.
Well, what does he mean by justice? We'll find out. According to a new Gallup poll, 43% of Americans say socialism, Bernie Sanders style, would be good for America. Dr. David Bratt, Dean of Liberty School of Business, joins me a little bit later here on Washington Watch. And on the life front, a federal judge chastised Mississippi lawmakers yesterday when he indicated that he is likely to block a Mississippi law that will ban most abortions once the baby's heartbeat can be detected. That's typically at 6 weeks of pregnancy. U.S. District Court Judge Carlton Reeves, who previously struck down the state's 15-week abortion ban, said the heartbeat bill, quote, smacks of defiance to this court, end quote. Is it defiance or diligence? I'll ask Mississippi Governor Phil Bryant when he joins us later here on Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at TPerkins. We've got a lot to cover in today's program, so if you happen to miss anything on your way home, it will all be archived later on Washington Watch. To go to Tony Perkins, and it's all right there. Also, if you'd like some more information about how you can join us on the upcoming cruise to Alaska, it's all found right there at the website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T. Perkins. All right. You may recall this. Yale Law School, I'll give you the history on this. We were discussing this with Josh Hawley, I think, last month, who's also a graduate of Yale Law School. They had a Federalist Society attorney, happened to be the lawyer from Alliance Defending Freedom, came to speak about the Supreme Court case, Masterpiece Cake Shop versus Colorado Civil Rights Commission, in which their client, Jack Phillips, was affirmed in his decision not to bake a cake celebrating same-sex marriage. Well, when they invited the attorney, an attorney, by the way, who argued at the Supreme Court to speak at the law school, well, a activist group on the left, a homosexual group called the Outlaws, began to protest against Yale Law School. And in fact, Yale caved. And then they began pursuing a policy that said that students, law students who interned at public interest law firms, and Yale does something that's quite generous. They pay kind of a summer stipend or salary for those law students who intern at these public interest law firms. And they also, if they take a full-time position in one of these firms once they graduate, if their salary is below the average, they forgive their student loan debt. They just erase it. But they were pursuing a policy saying that if you interned or you went to work for one of these organizations, like Alliance Defending Freedom, well, that didn't apply. And so that launched an investigation by Senator Ted Cruz into Yale's policy, a policy that he says, and I agree, is discriminatory. So anyway, we're trying to get him. He's supposed to be joining us. I think he was actually speaking after I did on this event at the Hill, so he might be still tied up. So we're going to talk with him about that and about Iran, which has, as I said, has been in the news quite a bit. kind of saber-rattling against the United States. But they have a long repressive record when it comes to religious freedom in their country, going back since the Iranian Revolution in 1979 for 40 years. Christians, other religious minorities being persecuted by their own government. And, of course, the United States government speaking out on this, the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom, I was speaking in that capacity today about that as Senator Cruz was also one of those speakers. All right. And he's not yet – we don't have Senator Cruz? Okay. All right. We're waiting for him to join us. A lot of other stuff happening here on Capitol Hill today that is of note. There is a number of judicial candidates that are going through the Senate Judiciary Committee that we're watching very closely. And we'll actually, I think we're going to have Josh Hawley on tomorrow talking about some of those. So let's see if we can go ahead and let's skip ahead and see if we can get Dr. Wilcock on the line until we get until Senator Cruz gets free, because we got a lot of ground to cover. Don't have any time to waste today. I don't want to miss anything. So we're going to try to move ahead to our next topic, and then we'll get Senator Cruz when he gets free off of Capitol Hill. Interesting study out about religious couples. It's a new study that reveals that religious couples have happier marriages. Now, this is not new. There's a lot of data that is out there regarding marriages. But Dr. Brad Wilcox, who's the director of the National Marriage Project and professor of sociology at the University of Virginia, just did this new study. In fact, in 2016, he co-authored Soulmates, Religion, Sex, Love, and Marriage Among African-American Americans and Latinos. Now, his research has focused on marriage, fatherhood, and cohabitation, especially on ways that family structure, civil society, and cultural influence the quality and stability of family life in the United States and around the globe. In fact, he did a study on the covenant marriage law that I passed 20 years ago in Louisiana. So he joins us now. Dr. Wilcox, thanks so much for joining us today.
Here tonight.
Let's talk about this. Religious couples in your study have stronger marriages. They're happier in their marriages. Is that what you found?
Yeah, we find that religious couples report the greatest satisfaction on things like, you know, their commitment, their overall happiness, and their sense of being connected to one another.
Now, you also found that the egalitarian marriages, those that are not religious, but they have an equal view of one another and duties in the home, they also report high levels of satisfaction in their relationship.
Yeah, what's kind of striking about this is there's a kind of J curve in marital happiness where secular progressive wives are doing comparatively well, and religiously conservative wives are doing especially well in this research. And women who are kind of in the middle ideologically and religiously, you know, are often less satisfied. And what I think part of the story here is that in both the left and the right camps, they have a clear vision of their family life and how they're going to do things. But I also think a big part of the story here is that both progressives and religious conservatives expect a lot of men. They've got a clear expectation that, you know, guys should be involved on the family front. I think that's a good expectation, and it spells better relationships when, you know, the father, when the husband is actively engaged in the life of the marriage and the home.
Any real surprises here for you? I mean, I know you've been doing this for a long time on marriage, relationships, the intersection of faith and all that. Any surprises in this?
Well, you know, frankly, the J curve that I've just described to you was a bit of a surprise. Just kind of seeing that wives at different ends of the ideological spectrum are doing comparatively well in marital quality. That was a surprise to me. We also have research in this new report indicating that religious wives, that is wives who share faith with their husbands, who go to church, are about 50% more likely to, that they're strongly satisfied with their sexual relationship compared to other wives in America. So, you know, I think a lot of folks have this idea of like the church lady being some kind of uptight, you know, out of touch woman, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But in the real world, you know, what we see is that women who share faith with their husbands experience better relationships, more intimacy, and that has important implications for the quality of their sexual relationships.
I also found it interesting, Dr. Wilcox, that you had on the one side, you had those who were very religious couples sharing the same faith, active in it, reporting high levels of satisfaction. And then you had, you know, completely on the other end, you had the secular, more egalitarian. But that really refutes the stereotyping that religious families tend to be patriarchal and oppressive. It sounds like that's not the case in these very religious homes.
Yeah, we find that joint decision-making is reported, you know, pretty highly among religiously conservative women, as well as more secular progressive women. What's interesting here, too, though, is that we also find that a number of outcomes in terms of, you know, things like relationship quality and sexual satisfaction and infidelity, it's often the nominally religious couples who are doing worse. So what I mean by that is if you've got like a nominal Baptist, someone who goes to church maybe for Christmas and Easter, and that's about it, you know, they're often doing poorly on a number of our outcomes in this new report, and that's consistent with other research that I have done. So a little religion looks like a bad thing based both upon this study and some other research that I've done in the past.
Well, that would be kind of biblical. That would be kind of lukewarm. And Jesus even talked about that. One other aspect that I thought was interesting, you talked about sexual satisfaction of those religious couples. They also have a higher fertility rate, so I guess those two go together.
Yeah, definitely babies do require sex. And we do see among religious, you know, religious women and men that they report, you know, more kids than their, you know, their fellow citizens who are not religious. I also should be honest in saying there's one piece of sobering news in this report, and that is we don't find any advantage for couples when it comes to reports of domestic violence or sort of, you know, sort of bad behavior in marriage. And so I think one takeaway from the report is that we could hear more about, you know, conflict and domestic violence, you know, from the pulpit, from pastors and priests, in addressing that issue, I think more commonly, more forthrightly.
So you're saying that in the among religious couples, that's a problem?
No, what I'm saying is that there's no advantage to being religious when it comes to, you know, the odds of facing domestic violence or some kind of controlling behavior in your marriage or your relationship. So the point I'm making is that we see this problem across religious and secular lines in this new report. And I think it's a reminder to all of us that we could be, I think, more on top
proactive
of this issue. You know, exactly.
Yeah. Yep. Dr. Wilcox, up against the break. As always, great to talk with you. Thanks so much. Folks, don't go away. Senator Cruz on the other side of the break.
There is unprecedented religious persecution around the globe. In recent years, research has found increasing governmental and social hostility towards religious believers worldwide. For the last 10 years, Christians have been harassed in more countries, including the United States, than any other religious group. While the specific threats to religious freedom vary in type and intensity, one common source is the legal and cultural support for apostasy, blasphemy, and anti-conversion laws, which often threaten the freedom to choose or change one's faith. In a new publication from Family Research Council, we list which nations around the world have these unjust laws on the books and spotlight people who have faced severe penalties simply for sharing or changing their faith. For more information on religious hostility due to apostasy, blasphemy, and anti-conversion laws around the world, visit frc.org/ABA laws. That's frc.org/ABA laws.
When you look at what is going on in our country and culture today, do you often ask, what can I do? Well, mark your calendar for the Values Voters Summit on October 11th through 13th in Washington, D.C., and join thousands of Americans just like you who want to change the culture in a way that human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. Past speakers include President Donald Trump, Vice President Mike Pence, Secretary Mike Pompeo, Kirk Cameron, Dana Loesch, and Ben Carson. In addition, there will be opportunities to meet with organizations and attendees that share a Christian worldview, and informational sessions focused on the topics of life, religious liberty, the LGBT movement, national security, the realities of socialism, and more. On October 11th through 13th, stand with thousands of Values voters to restore our great nation. Registration is now open. Don't miss the early bird price of $99. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. As I mentioned earlier at the top of the program, Senator Ted Cruz of Texas has stepped up his investigation into Yale Law School over what he says are the school's discriminatory actions against students with traditional Christian views. As chairman of the Senate Judiciary Constitution Subcommittee, Senator Cruz sent the school a letter on Monday demanding that Yale hand over internal communications on the school's treatment of its Christian and conservative students. Now, he has a long record arguing for defending religious freedom. In fact, as I mentioned, he was a keynote speaker along with me and Senator Brownback, or Ambassador Brownback, today at an International Christian Concern conference being held on Capitol Hill, speaking about the persecution of Christians in Iran. Senator, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, it's always good to be with you.
I'm sorry I didn't get to see you. I had to leave before you spoke, but I know that you spoke with great passion, as you always do, on the issue of the persecution of the church. Specifically, today we were talking about Iran. Very troubling what we see happening in that region of the world.
Deeply concerning. Christians are the most persecuted religious group on earth. And in fact, studies show 1 in 9 Christians across the globe face serious persecution. And of the 10 countries with the greatest persecution, 8 of the 10 are Islamic countries. Christians face persecution from radical Islamists. They face persecution from communists. They face persecution from dictatorial regimes across the country. And thank you, Tony, for being so relentless and passionate speaking up for persecuted Christians and persecuted people of all faiths. Nobody should be persecuted or face imprisonment or torture because of his or her faith.
You're absolutely right, and we have a platform to speak to that here in the United States as we kind of set the standard First Amendment. But that's why what you're doing with Yale Law School is so important, because we can't fail to see the warning signs of that pending persecution here when we allow stuff like what appears to be happening on the campus at Yale Law School.
Well, that's exactly right. And you know, the backstory in terms of how this discriminatory policy came about, I think, is quite revealing. As you know, the Alliance Defending Freedom, or ADF, is a national nonprofit public interest law firm that represents and defends religious liberty. And your listeners are all familiar with the Colorado Baker case, the Baker who who was persecuted and fined because he was not willing to participate in and celebrate a same-sex wedding and to bake the wedding cake for it. And he believed that doing so was contrary to his faith. And as a consequence, he was persecuted. That case went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, and the U.S. Supreme Court ruled with the baker and said that he had First Amendment rights to practice his faith, to live according to his faith, and that was protected by the First Amendment. Well, a lawyer from ADF was speaking on the Yale campus and speaking about the victory, the big victory they just had at the U.S. Supreme Court. And the reaction, which sadly is not much of a surprise on today's campuses, is that there was a protest from the left, in particular the LGBT group. They're called Outlaws, which I have to admit is a fairly clever name. But they reacted as campus leftists do, and they protested, and they demanded all sorts of changes from Yale. One of their demands was that Yale change their student loan program. Yale has a program that provides stipends for Yale law students who are working in public interest law firms, and also provides loan repayment for students who go work at public interest firms. Well, Yale, in response to the demand from their LGBT group, changed their policy. So now any Yale student will get this financing and this financial aid unless they choose to go work at a Christian organization that believes in traditional marriage or believes in traditional sexual values. And what appears to be the case is this was targeted very directly at ADF, that there was one target and one target only, and that was ADF. As you noted, I chair the Constitution Subcommittee of the Senate Judiciary Committee, and so we have launched an investigation into this religious bigotry, this religious discrimination. Yale receives large amounts of federal funds, and it's against federal civil rights law to discriminate based on religious faith. And just this week, the committee submitted to Yale a request for production of all of the documents, all of the emails, all of the correspondence behind this policy, which I think is likely to reveal. Yale's indicated it intends to cooperate, and I think it's likely to indicate that this was driven by a very specific animus to discriminate against Christians and to try to blacklist ADF and punish any Yale students who choose to work there.
Now, Senator, does Yale have a legal obligation to make sure they turn over all of those internal documents and they're not simply selective in what they give you?
Well, that's a matter that could be subject to dispute. As it stands right now, this is a request for production. So there's not an affirmative legal duty to comply, although they publicly stated they intend to cooperate. If Yale refuses cooperation, then the Judiciary Committee can always subpoena the documents. I hope it doesn't come to that. I hope that they honor the commitments that they've made publicly. They're going to cooperate. And they hand the materials over, but we'll see how they choose to conduct themselves.
What's the time frame here that you think you may get information from Yale?
We have a date. I'll tell you. I don't recall off the top of my head the date. It is a quick turnaround, but I don't recall the specific date for the production of documents.
Well, I think this is extremely important because if one of them, like Yale, who is a leader in the law field, is able to get away with this, you will find others follow suit.
That is exactly right. I think Yale Law School is the canary in the coal mine. If they get away with this, we'll see law school after law school after law school following this same pattern. And I'll tell you what the LGBT group demanded of Yale, not just that they discriminate against Christians in financial aid. They demanded that they discriminate against anyone who believes in traditional marriage in admissions, that they
right.
not even admit anyone who believes in a biblical definition of marriage. That is profoundly dangerous, and we've got to stand up and prevent it.
Absolutely, without question. Senator Ted Cruz, as always, great to talk with you. Thanks so much for coming on today.
Take care. God bless.
All right, Senator Ted Cruz of Texas. All right, coming up next, a new poll from Gallup. 4 out of 10 Americans say socialism would be good for America. Dr. Dave Bratt from Liberty University School of Business is here next. Don't go away. More to come.
Grandpa Jerry, what are you doing?
What?
What does it look like I'm doing? I'm sitting on this bench enjoying my tea and reading the news.
You always tell me that I need to stand firm for faith, family, and freedom. Why aren't you standing?
Well, now with this new Stand Firm app, I can sit and stand at the same time. And if you got the Stand Firm app, you could learn something besides that garbage of peddling in public schools. You could listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, where Tony and leaders on the Hill and other culture influences weigh in on current events. You can read FRC's latest publications and articles responding to what's going on in the news, like this.
Oh.
You can play trivia and earn points for free prizes. You can even access all of FRC's publications directly to sharpen your mind and give you the ability to discern the thoughts and intentions of the heart.
I can be a mind reader?
Kid, that's from the Bible, the richest piece of literature on God's green earth.
Can I see this stand-up? Wow, this would keep me informed. Visit frc.org/app to download FRC's Stand Firm app.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. The website, tonyperkins.com. All right, a Gallup poll just released says 43% of Americans say socialism would be a good thing for the country. 51% believe socialism would be a bad thing from the country. Now, what's interesting about this poll is that it's been taking place for quite some time. In fact, the results contrast. You can contrast these results with the 1942 Roper Fortune survey that found 40% describing socialism as a bad thing, only 25% a good thing. So we've seen quite a significant shift in the views of socialism. Now, previous Gallup research shows that Americans' definition of socialism has changed over the years. So this might explain some of it, with nearly one in four now associating the concept with social equality and 17% associating it with a more classical definition of having some degree of government control over the means of production. So when you have you have people like Bernie Sanders and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez talking about it. In fact, I mean, she has a hard time coming up with a definition. Here's a clip of what she had to say. Play the clip of AOC.
What does capitalism mean? What does socialism mean, etc.? For me, when I think about what those definitions are, capitalism, to me, it's an ideology of capital. The most important thing is the concentration of capital, and it means that we seek and prioritize profit and the accumulation of money above all else, and we seek it at any human and environmental cost.
Did you understand that? I don't think anybody else did either. In fact, I don't think she does. So the whole concept, the definition, I should say, of socialism has changed, quite frankly, because we're not teaching all of these concepts, capitalism, what true capitalism is, what socialism is. We're not teaching it. Now, what I find interesting Oh, by the way, a majority of Democrats have said they view socialism positively in Gallup polling since 2010. So it's been rising in the last 9 years. In this most recent survey, 57% of Democrats said they view socialism as a positive thing, a good thing for the country. That might explain while, you know, the I don't know, what are we up to today, three dozen Democratic presidential candidates are clamoring for socialism. That could explain it, because increasingly Democrats, unsure of what it really means, they don't know what it means, but they like it. And so they're pursuing it. Now, here's the problem, I think, for them. At least it should be, but the media is complicit in this. How do you square this infatuation with socialism and what is unfolding south of us in Venezuela? Venezuela is a socialist country. But here's some other things you should know. You probably do, because we've talked about it. But Venezuela is sitting on top of the world's largest oil reserves. It at one time was one of the most affluent, wealthiest countries in Latin America. They have they have more oil in the ground than Saudi Arabia. They have everything they need to be successful, but yet they're an economic basket case where people can't even get running water. They have power outages, and they have a hydroelectric facility that now the dam is falling apart because they haven't kept it up, because under socialism it just didn't work. But I mean, they in fact that hydro facility provides a power for like the entire country. And that's in addition to the oil reserves. I mean, the country has everything they need, but yet they are imploding. Maduro and his dictatorship over his socialist country, I mean, they can't get rid of him soon enough. That's exhibit A of socialism. In fact, you know, when people start this conversation about democratic socialism, say Venezuela. Venezuela. That's all you have to say. That's what America would look like under the policies of Bernie Sanders and AOC and her new Green Deal. You cannot walk away from these conversations. I believe we have to engage people. Something that we didn't get Dr. Bratt, but we'll get him on later. He's former member of Congress, now dean at the business school at my alma mater, Liberty University. But folks, we need to do some education among our friends, family, young people, especially if they're off on college campuses, about the byproduct of socialism, the end result of socialism. All right. When we come back, Governor Phil Bryant of Mississippi joins us. Mississippi passing one of the heartbeat bills, and a federal judge yesterday chastising lawmakers for passing the law, saying that they're defiant toward his court. Well, I'll let the governor respond to that next here on Washington Watch.
In states like New York, Virginia, and Vermont, radical legislation has been written legalizing abortion late in pregnancy, when babies can feel pain and are able to live outside the womb.
Happy birthday to you.
They've gone even further, repealing protections of infants born alive, allowing killing even after birth.
Happy
Congress has yet to protect the life of every newborn baby. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com to send Nancy Pelosi a newborn hat to show Congress every new life should be welcomed with warmth and love, not hate, not death. End birthday abortions. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com.
Happy birthday to you.
Paid for by Family Research Council.
The latest Trojan horse on Capitol Hill is called the Equality Act. The way the left is advertising this bill is misleading because it does not further equality at all. It would actually violate current protections in place that allow private institutions and people of faith to freely act in accordance to their deeply held beliefs. The Equality Act explicitly removes religious liberty protections that were originally put in place with bipartisan support. Its stated goal is equality, but its actual result is harm to vast members of communities, individuals, and Americans as a whole by undercutting our foundational freedom of religion. Is this really what equality looks like? A more fitting name for the Equality Act would be the Inequality Act. For more information on the mass threat of the Equality Act, visit frc.org/EqualityAct2019. That's frc.org/EqualityAct2019.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. And let me remind you, a couple of days left if you have interest in joining us on a cruise to Alaska. The scenery is remarkable. Just going to Alaska, being able to see God's creation, and doing it with other conservatives, Christians, it's a great vacation. I invite you to join my wife and I, along with several members of the FRC team, former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, retired from the United States Army, our executive vice president here, and former Ambassador Ken Blackwell. Find out more. Go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. All right. As I mentioned earlier in the program, U.S. District Court Judge Carlton Reeves, who previously struck down Mississippi's 15-week abortion prohibition bill and their religious freedom law, indicated yesterday that he is likely to block Mississippi's heartbeat bill. Now, Mississippi joins a number of other states in passing these heartbeat bills, which says when there's a heartbeat, that's when we say life is there and no abortion's past that point. Now, it makes sense because, you know, when do you declare someone dead? Well, when there's no heartbeat. What do you do when someone is lying there? You try to get a pulse, see if there's a heartbeat. They're declared dead once the heart stops beating. Well, once the heart, you can determine that it is beating. It's a life. You can't question it. I mean, we know that it begins at conception, but from those that, you know, want to focus on the heartbeat, hey, there it is. Well, yesterday he indicated he's likely to block Mississippi's heartbeat bill. In fact, he went on to chastise lawmakers in the process, saying their adoption of the heartbeat bill, quote, this is a quote from the federal judge, smacks of defiance to this court, end quote. Joining me now with his reaction is the best person to talk about it. It's Mississippi's Governor Phil Bryant. Governor, welcome back to Washington
Tony,
Watch.
Thank you. Oh, absolutely. Love Washington Watch and FRC, and thank you so much for spreading the word, getting the truth out to the people across America. So it's always my great honor to join you.
Well, Governor, I don't call this defiance. I call it diligence. You're doing the work of the
absolutely.
People.
Absolutely. And it was somewhat shocking to hear a federal judge speak in the terms of smacks of defiance and literally chastise the attorneys and members of the Mississippi legislature for doing the will of the people. This is a republic, not a dictatorship, and the people of a republic speak through their elected officials, and the vast majority of those in both the House and the Senate voted in favor of passing a heartbeat bill. I would tell the judge that I do not believe at that point they took into consideration any defiance towards his court or him personally or any other judge. We often wonder why this particular judge seems to receive every social bill that is passed by anything that deals with social norms as we know them. Within the Mississippi legislature, lawsuits are automatically filed, and they go to this one judge time and time again. We're curious about that. We think that's just our right as Americans to be curious about that and not to have a federally appointed judge say that the Mississippi legislature and the people they support are defiant because they're passing a piece of legislation that they truly believe in. We believe that taking the life of that unborn child is murder. So if you cannot stand for the life of an unborn child, I'm not sure what we will be allowed to stand for. But on the other side, if it takes defiance to save the life of that child, then so be it.
You know, I was scratching, or collectively we were scratching our head here at the Family Research Council when we saw this judge having this case. As you said, he had the 15-week abortion prohibition bill. He had your religious liberty case. And the odds of the same judge drawing all of these cases, highly unusual, put it that way.
I've been sued over the state flag. He had that case. I've been sued over trying to expand the board of the airport commission by making it more diverse. He has that case. So every case, I think, that has the name Phil Bryant in it, somehow whoever's in charge of assigning the cases says this is a case for Carlton Reeves because he's got every single one of them. And we can't seem to get an answer as to why that continues to happen. But as I said, it wasn't as if we were thinking about a judge or the court case. Everyone kept saying, pass this bill, there's going to be well, we get sued over everything. That's the way the left today works. They can't beat you at the ballot box. They can't beat you on the floor of your legislature with the legislative process, so they sue you. And then they go to their friends in the media who begin their attack, and then all the online joins in and the trolls. But, you know, that's just what you have to realize is going to occur. It doesn't faze me. I'm going to do what's right every time, and I'm honored that Georgia and Alabama, Ohio, Kentucky, other states are beginning to join this movement.
Yes, it is. In fact, you're absolutely right. You're not alone. There are several states, as you pointed out, Kentucky, Ohio, Georgia, even my home state of Louisiana, pushing forward some bills on this front that simply, I think, is a response to what began in New York earlier this year, where Governor Cuomo wanted to push the nation toward infanticide, and Governor Northam of Virginia applauded him and egged him on. And I think the American people, as you said, in a republic, they speak through their elected officials, and we see the pushback here where Americans say, you know what, we don't want to be like that. We want to protect human life.
No, absolutely, and I think the governor of Virginia did not realize, as he was quite calmly describing how a child that somehow might escape the horrendous procedure of an abortion, if that occurred, you keep them comfortable while you're determining how to murder them. And he did so in such a heartless, calm manner that I believe it shocked the senses of most Americans that saw it. And many of which, I can tell you, never realized that one child could survive an abortion. They were unaware that that ever happened. And apparently now we're finding out that it does happen. We have testimony of those that have survived an attempted abortion. And now we find out that they kill the baby after a failed attempt of an abortion. So, you know, this has been hidden by Planned Parenthood and all of those who did not want us to know what a real abortion was. And I think, as I tell reporters now, science is helping. So sonograms where you can see at that point of heartbeat. You hear that heartbeat. And all of us that are fathers or parents or grandparents know the excitement the first time that takes place. You hear that baby's heartbeat. That baby is alive. It is a human being. And we are trying to protect his civil liberties or her civil rights in the womb.
Yeah, as you point out, this does happen. The CDC, which only gets numbers from about six states out of 50, report that there are hundreds of these that have occurred. Mm. And so this does happen. It is real. And as you said, there have been those who have survived abortions that testify to the effect that they survived this effort. Now, this law, as passed by the Mississippi legislature, you signed into law, it was to take effect July the 1st.
That's right.
But the judge, Judge Carlton Reeves, did not indicate yesterday what he's going to do, but based on everything else he's done, I assume he's going to stay this. But you guys are going to take this as far as you have to.
That's right. And someone will have to take one of these cases. We would hope that it would be ours, because I would be blessed to know that I was in line to get Roe v. Wade to the United States Supreme Court. That's the other thing that seems to shock our media when they say, well, aren't you really trying to get to the Supreme Court? Absolutely. That's exactly where the other side wanted to get with Roe v. Wade, and get in front of a Supreme Court. I don't need activists in the Supreme Court. All I need is someone who will properly, as the United States Supreme Court should do, interpret the law to determine whether or not it's constitutional. And we don't believe Roe v. Wade was constitutional. We do believe it's constitutional for the states who has a sincere commitment to protect the lives of citizens. I do, as governor, the number one responsibility I have is to protect the lives of the citizens of the state of Mississippi, to include the unborn. So we have more than a reasonable manner in which we go about protecting that life, and part of it is a heartbeat. And so we believe that we are on firm legal ground in our constitutional right to protect life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness in the United States.
You know, Governor, that's one of the things I like about you, is that people know exactly where you stand. You don't hide it. You don't dance around it. You like the president, you lean right into it, and people know where you stand. And I think it's refreshing, and I think that's why you've had a successful political career in Mississippi, is because people never had to guess where you stand on the issues. But you're coming to the end of your term.
I am. About nine more months, we'll finish up. Actually, the next inauguration is the 14th of July, so I will be finishing two wonderful terms as governor of the state of Mississippi, and that's the way it should be. I'll be able to return to my private life, and knowing that I've done all that I could do, and knowing that people may not agree with where I stand, but they have no doubt about where I am and what I intend to do.
Well, let me just ask you before we wrap this up, because you've taken a stand repeatedly for the sanctity of human life. You have stood strong for religious freedom in the face of really international opposition. You've had a lot of these international corporations, beating the drum like they did in North Carolina. Of course,
right.
You know, it's a lot of bark and no bite. What would you say to those coming behind you when it comes to those core values and this increasingly intolerant left that we're facing?
Well, one, you have to know what your core values are. And so if that's not common to you, if you don't easily know that defending an unborn child is something you must do. You know, I started life as a deputy sheriff. You and I were in law enforcement. We were trained to put our lives in front of the lives of people that we didn't even know. If we had to lose our life trying to save theirs, that's what our training was. And so we rushed into dangerous situations to try to save lives. So I know immediately what my responsibility is for an unborn child, whether it's a child in the womb or a two-year-old that's in danger. I'm going to rush and do all that I can to try to save that life. So you got to have that core value. And then when you recognize those core values depend on faith, and stand firmly on what you believe in. If you try to move backwards, they will run over you. This has been a battle for, I think, the heart and soul of this nation since Roe v. Wade, and it is time for all of us to stand against this. A lot of people are afraid, particularly in the political world. They say, oh, that's politically incorrect to say that. Maybe you ought to parse words a little bit. You need to look directly at them and say, this is murder. I'm going to do all I can to save this child's life, and if it means going to the United States Supreme Court, we are going to do that. If it means seeming to smack of defiance, that's not our intent, but on some occasions you have to be defiant in the protection of life of the unborn child and those that are under your care, custody, and control.
Could not agree with you more. And to Judge Reeves' remarks, I quite frankly think that smacks of elitism, that somehow the court is the final say in our system of government. It is one of three branches of government. The people have a right to speak through their elected officials, and the court does get it wrong. We know that. We know from the history of this country, many times the court has gotten it wrong, and it's taken the legislature and the people to set it straight.
Our Civil War, when the Supreme Court ruled in Dred Scott that a human being was property, United States Supreme Court ruling. So, yeah, they've got it wrong before. I think they got it wrong in the 1970s, and hopefully we'll have another opportunity to present the case for life.
Governor Phil Bryant, as always, great to have you on the program. I look forward to seeing you real soon.
Tony, thank you so much, and thank you for what you do. God bless y'all.
All right, Governor Phil Bryant of Mississippi. Well, I hope Mississippi, I'd like to see them be the state that makes it all the way to the Supreme Court with their heartbeat bill. You got Ohio, you got Kentucky, you got Georgia, other states vying to get there by standing for the sanctity of human life. And I think this Judge Reeves, this is the arrogance of the court. That you have these uber legislators who think that they know better than the rest of, in this case, the Mississippi legislature. One guy thinks he knows better than the entire legislature of Mississippi and the governor as to what is best for that state. Now, if he wants to strike it down, that's fine. If he wants to strike it down, they then appeal it to the appellate court and make it all the way to the Supreme Court. But it's the comments that somehow by them doing the work of the people, protecting the sanctity of human life, that they're defying his court. Who is he? He's an appointed judge. He's an appointed judge who, by the way, is appointed for life. He's appointed to the bench for life, and he chastises those who are simply trying to give innocent babies the right to life. I thank God for lawmakers and governors like Phil Bryant and others who are willing to stand up and do what is right in the face of opposition. All right, folks, out of time. Thanks so much for joining us. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you've taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.